Donald J. Trump is the best president ever. Believe me, we have done more already in this presidency than any president in history. Also, the best business man ever. Believe me, especially now that I'm president. Oh, don't tell the ethics office. They're nasty, awful people. Oh, media is awful. Also, nasty, awful people. True. That's right. You can't trust the fake news media. So-called news. Except for Fox News. Fox News, you can trust. Especially my friends at Fox and Friends. Friends. They are good people. And they tell it like it is. Believe me, they were the first to like Donald J. Trump, and they like me more than anybody. The courts, also bad. Don't trust the courts. Very, very bad people. Just ruled again against my Muslim ban. No. Just trying to keep bad people, Muslims, not Muslims, out of the country, and they won't let me do it. Two words for you. Believe me. Bankruptcy. Bankruptcy. No good businessman pays his bills. Or taxes. No taxes either. No taxes. Nope. Don't pay your taxes. But this day is all about you. So you should celebrate with some Trump steaks. Delicious, delicious. Delicious steaks. The best, believe me. Wash it down with some Trump wine. The best wine. While you stay at a Trump hotel, best hotels ever. You can order room service, it's great, it's great. You should treat yourself, it's your day, it's all about you.
It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal. David.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thanks for giving us a few minutes of your time. On today's show, news, as always. We're going to spend, as always, more time on the news than we'd often like. How come the news is almost always negative? Then we'll take a quick listener question. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about our economic rationale and why it's not working the way it's supposed to and not working for you. First off, getting right into the news. Late breaking news, hot off the presses. And when I say hot off the presses, I mean hot off the presses. The Trump administration's letting word out that it is going to pull out of the Paris Climate Accords. We talked a few weeks ago about how America is becoming the guys in the black hats. And this is becoming more and more real as every week goes by. Almost 200 countries across the world signed on to the Paris Climate Accords. to make progress on the single greatest issue confronting the planet. But America is going to be the rogue nation. We're going to back out. How exactly this is going to happen, we're not sure yet. But apparently the decision has already been made to back out of the Paris Climate Accords. It's really remarkable we could fantasize about this, think about this for a while, but now we literally have the experience of living in a country that we look and say, how could this be us? How could we be the ones that everybody else has very good reason to hate? Interesting with this story were the various sides arguing, apparently, with President Manchild on this one to get his attention. The side that won is the side with the white supremacists, Steve Bannon and his ilk, the little other little boys, Steve Miller and his ilk, and Orwellian Lee. I don't know if that's a... I guess you can't really turn that into a adverb. Orwellian Lee, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, was arguing that we should pull out of the Paris Climate Accords. This is Trump's appointment, Scott Pruitt, head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Let's just stop with the fiction and just call it the Fuck the Environment Agency, the FEA from now on. The Fuck the Environment Agency, whose job it is to do what it can to destroy the environment. Just emblematic of the people running various government agencies in this country. Yeah, drain the swamp. They're all there. Well, maybe Trump made this decision because he was in a fit of pique coming back from his European trip. Normally, going abroad is a good way for presidents to get away from the news a little bit and get photo ops that make them look presidential and look good. But not this president. Every time he leaves home, it's just another embarrassment for the country. And this trip was one embarrassment after another. This is really the little boy man-child administration. Donald Trump's a little angry, kept taking his toy and going home. Let's start with the visuals on this one. With iconic visuals from Trump's European trip, the G7 summit, the NATO summit. Do you remember back to when you asserted your manhood through a handshake? Through squeezing the other guy's hand harder than he could squeeze yours? Well, five-year-old president-in-chief, commander-in-chief, President Trump, was playing this game with the president of France. Worse than that, he was basically getting bitch-slapped trying to do it. Losing out in the masculine fight over a handshake. That's why the visual of Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, heading towards the other members of the NATO summit, I forget if this was a picture from the NATO summit or the G7 summit, walking over and absolutely steering away from the president of the United States. What a metaphor. Steering away from the president of the United States to swerve to Angela Merkel, the president of Germany. I guess Trump's a little angry, perhaps, at not being shown the proper respect. Well, there was that not being shown the proper respect at that photo op, which most of you have already seen the images of. If you haven't, you need to see them. Donald Trump yanking the president of Montenegro aside to rush to the front for a photo op. The interesting backstory of that one is Montenegro and its longtime efforts to join NATO and how that's angered Russia, how they've been on the outs. Once again, Russia comes in. Maybe it was just a coincidence that it was the president of Montenegro that Trump was pulling out of the way. But maybe not so much. To give the president his due, and we're not right-wing radio, we're liberal radio, progressive radio, to give the president his due. Chances are, the photographer had said, let's get the smaller people in front. And Trump thought he said, smaller hands. And so he needed to race to the front of the photo because the small hands people needed to be in front. Then there's that other picture and story of Donald Trump at the G7 summit while everyone walked a few hundred yards. Everyone except for Donald Trump. All the leaders of the G7 managed to walk a few hundred yards from one destination to the next, but not Donald Trump. He waited behind. Again, the metaphor is too delicious to pass up on this one. The President of the United States and the United States being left behind by the rest of Europe and advanced nations. Being left behind to get into his golf cart and ride the few hundred yards. I know at this point in time, talking about Trump's hypocrisy is really beating a dead horse. But this is the same guy who during the campaign questioned Hillary Clinton's stamina? The guy who can't walk a few yards with everybody else? Now again, to be fair, a couple of the leaders at the summit had darker skin. And so Donald Trump naturally assumed that they were caddies, presumably. If Donald Trump sees a dark-skinned person, he just assumed it's a caddy since he didn't have lunch in front of him and they weren't clearing the plates. So he did what he naturally does, which is get into his golf cart while the caddies walked. That makes sense. Several weeks ago, and for weeks since, we've been lamenting the fact that America, some of America, has chosen to make Donald Trump the leader of the free world. We talked about the fact that, well, we didn't really need to feel that bad about it because once America elected Donald Trump president of the United States, we were no longer the leader of the free world. And boy, was this made obvious in Europe. We are following behind in a golf cart, although in reality, we're not even following. We're going in the wrong direction. Germany and European nations made it clear at the summit and clear afterwards that they're going to have to go it alone. That the United States can best be hoped not to get in the way. How far we have fallen. Well, now we move on to, of course, the latest at home on Russia. Investigations are moving forward, such as they are. And it is interesting to transition from Trump's European visit to the Russia story at home by noting how he has riven a hole in NATO. How he is undermining the NATO alliance, lashed out at NATO leaders. This is an alliance that has promoted stability around the world for generations. And Donald Trump may bring it all tumbling down in a matter of months. Who else wants to get rid of NATO? Who wants to undermine NATO? Why? Here's a coincidence. Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump's new best bud. Also during the week on Russia, we've found out that the investigation is getting closer and closer to home, literally. Now it is inside the White House, right next door to Donald Trump, with the surprisingly, amazingly talented and qualified Jared Kushner. Without a single qualification to have the portfolio of running this country that he has, now it turns out also has a lot of Russia baggage and is under investigation for his lies and his ties with Russia. We've seen more about payments by foreign governments. Payments to Trump hotels, to Trump properties. When Donald Trump took office, he promised that he would not take profits from his hotels, from his properties, from foreign dignitaries. That's already gone out the window, where they have made it clear that this presidency will profit Donald Trump and his family, at least those who aren't indicted and walked to prison, handsomely. Of course, if Jared Kushner ultimately is indicted for something and sent to prison, you can just imagine that that would make him profit even more handsomely through the Trump administration. On the one hand, we've seen progress. We have an independent prosecutor, as we talked about last week. We have a Senate investigation that actually seems to be investigating. And yet, you have to ask, what will we ever know about what's going on? Will we ever know the true story? You can bet at this very moment, the entirety of the Trump administration is busy classifying every single document and every single discussion and every single audio tape it possibly can, to keep away what they can from the investigators. But if they can't keep it away from the investigators, the next best thing is to keep it away from the American public. You wonder if this is a story that we will never, ever know the truth about. Okay, on a bit of a lighter note, a couple other quick news stories. News story appearing in the New York Times the other day. That's right, the fake media. But they had pictures. Donald Trump has a crest that he is using on some of his most lucrative properties. Very fancy, nice-looking crest that says Donald Trump on it. Turns out, he stole it. No big surprise there. President of the United States, successful businessman, just absolutely stole it from a British family for whom it was the coat of arms. Changed one name, changed one word on it to Trump. Other than that, it's the same crest. They can't even come up, they don't even have the decency to come up with something new. We have talked in the past about the issue of states' rights. There were a couple issues that came up this week. I just want to tie in briefly to what we talked about the concept of states' rights or local control. The state of Alabama just passed a law forbidding local efforts within Alabama, municipalities that may have more sense than the state does, to rename or remove monuments to slave owners, people who fought to keep blacks enslaved, KKK members. You know, Alabama's glorious history. Some municipalities have decided that this doesn't play well, either business-wise or decency-wise, and there's been a movement to remove these monuments, replace them, rename some of them. So much for local control. The states' rights advocates, you can bet, the Alabama government decided that they're going to forbid municipalities from doing that. Stay tuned to this story with regard to California and climate change. With the federal government showing no interest in doing anything to address the world's greatest problem, California has indicated that it will. And the rest of the world will be meeting with America's climate leader, California Governor Jerry Brown. You can expect that the states' rights advocates in our federal government will be spending the next few years in court trying to prevent California from doing what the federal government should be doing. As we indicated before, states' rights, usually a code word for two things. One, don't let the federal government tell us how we treat our blacks, our women, our gays. And don't let the federal government regulate our businesses. Businesses that, it turns out, on the global warming debate, were actually on the right side in this one. Turns out, while the white supremacists and the jackasses in Trump's cabinet were arguing to get us out of the Paris Climate Accords, corporations were overwhelmingly trying to keep us in, including ExxonMobil. Our last news story is not a happy one. What do Richard Collins III, Rick Best, and Taliesin Namkhamesh, and I'm sorry, I'm sure I mispronounced that last name, have in common? What they have in common is that they're all dead now. They've all been murdered by white supremacists, anti-Muslim haters, emboldened by the rhetoric and the actions coming out of the Trump administration. I was asked on a show a few weeks ago if I felt that the rise in hate in this country can be attributed to Donald Trump. And I said, let's not get ahead of this story. Let's wait until the evidence comes in. Well, the evidence is coming in. Studies have been demonstrating that white supremacists have been more emboldened to be violent, to attack people in this country, because of the people who are running this country. I know we're not allowed, we're not supposed to make allusions to Nazi Germany, but it just gets sadder and sadder and sadder, and closer and closer and closer. Who else has been emboldened? In Montana, you've all heard, the newly elected Republican congressman of Montana, right before the election, attacked and beat a reporter for having the nerve to ask a question. Was he motivated by Trump's attacks on the media? Of course he was emboldened by Trump's attacks on the media. And now literally attacking the media. He, of course, tried to lie his way out of it. And unfortunately, and I don't get to say this very often, Fox News reporters shot his story out of the water. Then there's the Texas legislator who just threatened to shoot one of his colleagues, who was upset that the Texas legislator had called the police on protesters because they looked a little on the brown side. They were arguing in favor of immigration rights, and therefore, they must be illegals. Led to an altercation, it led to a shouting match, an argument, and the Texas legislator threatened to shoot his colleague. He, of course, too, tried to lie his way out of it. Unfortunately, there have been too many witnesses there for him to get out of that. Okay, quickly on a listener question, Elizabeth from Astoria asks, how do you think Trump supporters view Trump's first 100 days in office? Do you think they're satisfied, hopeful, disappointed? Well, how do I think Trump supporters view Trump's first 100 days in office? Through the lens of their asshole, which is the way they view everything else coming out of politics and the administration. Do I think they are satisfied, hopeful, disappointed? There are a few who were somewhat reluctant Trump supporters who've started to peel away from the catastrophe, especially given what's been going on with Russia and feeling that they're basically fleeing a sinking ship. But as far as the Trump supporters, the core Trump supporters, I've argued repeatedly on this show that they are incapable of learning. They have no interest in learning. Reality will never affect their thinking. And no matter what tragedies come out of this administration, they will still proudly wear their Trump buttons. His approval ratings, no matter how bad they get, will not bottom out much below 30%, presumably. People are incapable of seeing the world. Okay, I'd like to introduce briefly, because I think it's going to provide some context to some of what we're talking about that the Trump administration has been doing. Economics, our economic system, our study of economics, is defined as the study of the efficient allocation of scarce resources. The idea of economics is we only have so much stuff in the world, so much potable water, so much oil, so much whatever minerals they put in my cell phones. There's only so much stuff in the world, and the world is better off if we utilize that stuff wherever it is most valued. That maximizes human happiness. You shouldn't be wasting valuable resources where they're not doing much good. They should be going to wherever they provide the most benefit. If there is a bottle of water at the edge of the desert, and someone is crawling through the desert, about to die of thirst, and at the same time, a car is traveling on the outskirts of the desert, and the vulture that's waiting for the dying man to die manages to poop on the hood of the car. Both of them reach the water bottle at the same time. For the sake of humanity, who should get the water bottle? Well, our economic system devises a plan that says, well, the person who's going to die of thirst should clearly have the water over the person who's going to use it to clean off the hood of his car. This will do more to promote the interests of humankind than to clean a car. Okay, this all makes sense. We want resources to be devoted to where they will do the most good. This, of course, requires one other assumption to make it work. Well, how do we allocate resources in America and most of the world? Well, we allocate resources based on what people are willing to pay for them. Presumably, the person dying of thirst would be willing to pay more for the water than the person who just wants to clean poop off his car. By showing a willingness to pay more, you're showing that you value whatever it is more. But the assumption that's required in there is that we all value money the same. If we don't value money the same, then we cannot judge the value of a resource by what people are willing to pay for it. Years ago, there was a story, I think, in the New Yorker magazine. It was a cute story many years ago. Talked about the fact that it looked at how much money Bill Gates had made since he started Microsoft. And they calculated that if Bill Gates is walking down the street and drops a $100 bill, it is cost ineffective for him to bend down and pick it up. Now, obviously, it's just an interesting story. He certainly would have people following him whose job it would be to pick up whatever crumbs he left behind, including the $100 bill. But the point was that Bill Gates had earned more than $100 in the span of the couple of seconds that it would take him to bend down and pick the money up. And I read this story and I think about the fact that I throw old ladies in the gutter for a nickel. Get out. It's mine. Get out of the way. I saw it first. And die for a nickel. But Bill Gates shouldn't be reaching down for a $100 bill. So if I'm crawling out of the desert dying of thirst and Bill Gates is riding in his limousine and gets bird poop on the hood, who's going to get the water? I would argue that in most cases, Bill Gates will get the water, not me. Bill Gates will get the water not because he values it more than I value it, but because the money that will take to purchase that water means so much less to him than it does to me. Which means the more we have income inequality, the more we have economic failure. Greater income inequality is going to necessarily mean that people value money differently. How could we fix this system? Well, in most cases, we can't. But imagine a scenario where instead of buying things by the money you are willing to pay for them, we decide to value items based on the time commitment people are willing to make to it. Now, yeah, we don't all value time the same anyway. Those of us who are unfortunate enough to not be as healthy, for instance, probably value time a little bit more. But we clearly value time closer. It's more equitable. Imagine if you had to pay for things with time. That won't work in most of our economic system because if I'm selling the water, I don't give a crap about your time. I just want your money. I'm going to sell it to who's going to give me the most. But what about other ways? What about our justice system? If I commit murder, and I don't plan on it, and Bill Gates commits murder, Well, ignoring problems with our legal system, and there are many. He and I would be subject to the same penalties when it comes to time served. We might each be judged guilty and sentenced to, let's say, 30 years in prison. We'd paid by time. And yet in our civil justice system, that's not how it works. If Bill Gates and I both get a parking ticket, well, it seems like it's fair. The parking ticket might be $100 for each of us. But that assumes we value money the same, and we clearly don't. Let's say we switched that around and did it according to time. Let's say that the punishment for parking illegally was 2 hours of your time, or the financial equivalent of 2 hours of your time. So if David Leventhal gets a parking ticket, perhaps it's $100. If Bill Gates gets a parking ticket, perhaps it's $250,000. Sound unfair? But I'd argue it's way more fair than the system we have now. I'm very scrupulous about how I park because the fine is a lot of money. It's a hardship for me. Does a millionaire or a billionaire in New York City have to worry so much about where he parks his car? If he parks in front of a hydrant, again, this is assuming that he's driving his car, but let's do it for the purposes of our discussion. I avoid parking in front of a fire hydrant. Does he? If the fine is essentially 10 seconds of your time, are you going to drive around the block a few times and park further away? No, what's the difference? Just pay the fine. Just keep paying the few dollars. It only takes you a few seconds to work it off anyway. So the system doesn't work in changing behavior to get us to follow the rules. The fine on wealthy people is so small compared to the fine on people who aren't wealthy. The wealthy people have no incentive or less incentive to follow the law. That doesn't make sense. We're increasing the number of scofflaws. And for fairness purposes, why don't we switch it around and say that the fine is going to be based on the amount of money that you make in a certain amount of time? This is not such a ridiculous prospect. It's something that I've been arguing in class for many years. And then last year, we found out that at least one country, Finland, has already instituted such a system, where Finland has 50-something thousand-dollar speeding tickets for people who have a lot of money based on how much money they make. It would be fairer. It would get more people to follow the rules. It would raise more money for the government. And it would lead to the better allocation of scarce resources. We haven't come up with an economic system that efficiently allocates scarce resources. We've come up with an economic system, surprise, surprise, that justifies why the rich should have everything. That's what we've come up with. A world where the rich should have everything and pay relatively less for it when we use some kind of measure that we all might share. Okay, we're out of time in today's show. We'll talk a little bit more on the next show about some other economic inefficiencies that matter to you and, in fact, are much of the rationale for what the Trump administration has been doing. We look forward to seeing you next week. Like Looking Forward? Go to ForwardNationRadio.com. That's ForwardNationRadio.com and get the full experience. You see the video from this and every episode there, and on our YouTube channel as well. Please join us. Please like us if you enjoy the show. Please share us with your friends. Listen to our podcast at podbean.com and spread the word. Thanks for joining us. Forward Nation Radio. Have a good week.
Been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.